be healed. 11. The Rift. 33 years ago, Dalinar danced from one foot to the other in the morning mist, feeling a new power, an energy in every step. Shard plate. His own shard plate. The world would never be the same place. They'd all expected he would someday have his own plate or blade, but he'd never been able to quiet the whisper of uncertainty from the back of his mind. What if it never happened? But it had. Stormfather, it had. He'd won it himself, in combat. Yes, that combat had involved kicking a man off a cliff, but he'd defeated a shardbearer regardless. He couldn't help but bask in how grand it felt. "Come, Dalinar," Sadeus said from beside him in the mist. Sadeus wore his own golden plate. "Patience."
"It won't do any good, Sadeus,"
Gavilar, clad in bright blue plate, said from Dalinar's other side. All three of them wore their faceplates up for the moment.
"The Kolin boys are chained axe-hounds, and we smell blood. We can't go into battle breathing calm breaths, centered and serene, as the Ardens teach."
Dalinar shifted, feeling the cold morning fog on his face. He wanted to dance with the anticipation spren whipping in the air around him. Behind, the army waited in disciplined ranks, their footsteps, clinkings, coughs, and murmured banter rising through the fog. He almost felt as if he didn't need that army. He wore a massive hammer on his back, so heavy an unaided man, even the strongest of them, wouldn't be able to lift it. He barely noticed the weight. Storms, this power. It felt remarkably like the thrill.
"Have you given thought to my suggestion, Dalinar?" Sadeus asked.
"No," Sadeus sighed.
"If Gavilar commands me," Dalinar said, "I'll marry." "Don't bring me into this," Gavilar said.
He summoned and dismissed his shardblade repeatedly as they talked.
"Well," Dalinar said, "until you say something, I'm staying single."
The only woman he'd ever wanted belonged to Gavilar. They'd married. Storms, they had a child now. A little girl. His brother must never know how Dalinar felt.
"But think of the benefit, Dalinar," Sadeus said. "Your wedding could bring us alliances, shards. Perhaps you could win us a princedom. One we wouldn't have to storming drive to the brink of collapse before they'd join us."
After 2 years of fighting, only 4 of the 10 princedoms had accepted Gavilar's rule, and 2 of those, Kolin and Sadeus, had been easy. The result was a united Alethkar against House Kolin. Gavilar was convinced that he could play them off one another, that their natural selfishness would lead them to stab one another in the back. Sadeus, in turn, pushed Gavilar toward greater brutality. He claimed that the fiercer their reputation, the more cities would turn to them willingly, rather than risk being pillaged.
"Well," Sadeus asked, "will you at least consider a union of political necessity?" "Storms, you still on that?" Dalinar said. "Let me fight. You and my brother can worry about politics." "You can't escape this forever, Dalinar. You realize that, right? We'll have to worry about feeding the Dark Eyes, about city infrastructure, about ties with other kingdoms. Politics."
"You and Gavilar," Dalinar said.
"All of us," Sadeus said. "All 3.
"Weren't you trying to get me to relax?" Dalinar snapped. "Storms."
The rising sun finally started to disperse the fog, and that let him see their target. A wall about 12 feet high. Beyond that, nothing. A flat, rocky expanse, or so it appeared. The Chasm City was difficult to spot from this direction. Named Rathalas, it was also known as the Rift, an entire city that had been built inside a rip in the ground.
Right, Lord Tenelon is a shard-bearer, right? Dalinar asked.
Sadeus sighed, lowering his faceplate.
We only went over this 4 times, Dalinar.
I was drunk.
Tenelon, shard-bearer?
Blade only, brother, Gabalar said.
He's mine, Dalinar whispered. Gabalar laughed.
Only if you find him first. I've half a mind to give that blade to Sadeus. At least he listens in our meetings.
All right, Sadeus said. Let's do this carefully. Remember the plan. Gabalar, you...
Gabalar gave Dalinar a grin, slammed his faceplate down, then took off running to leave Sadeus mid-sentence. Dalinar whooped and joined him, plated boots grinding against stone. Sadeus cursed loudly, then followed. The army remained behind for the moment. Rocks started falling. Catapults from behind the wall hurled solitary boulders or sprays of smaller rocks. Chunks slammed down around Dalinar, shaking the ground, causing rockbud vines to curl up. A boulder struck just ahead, then bounced, spraying chips of stone. Dalinar skidded past it, the plate lending a spring to his motion. He raised his arm before his eye slit as a hail of arrows darkened the sky.
"Watch the ballistas!" Gabalar shouted.
Atop the wall, soldiers aimed massive crossbow-like devices mounted to the stone. One sleek bolt, the size of a spear, launched directly at Dalinar, and it proved far more accurate than the catapults. He threw himself to the side, plate grinding on stone as he slid out of the way. The bolt hit the ground with such force that the wood shattered. Other shafts trailed netting and ropes, hoping to trip a shard-bearer and render him prone for a second shot. Dalinar grinned, feeling the thrill awaken within him, and recovered his feet. He leaped over a bolt trailing netting. Tenelon's men delivered a storm of wood and stone, but it wasn't nearly enough. Dalinar took a stone in the shoulder and lurched, but quickly regained his momentum. Arrows were useless against him, the boulders too random, and the ballistas too slow to reload. This was how it should be. Dalinar, Gabalar, Sadeus, together. Other responsibilities didn't matter. Life was about the fight. A good battle in the day, then at night, a warm hearth, tired muscles, and a good vintage of wine. Dalinar reached the squat wall and leaped, propelling himself in a mighty jump. He gained just enough height to grab one of the crenels of the wall's top. Men raised hammers to pound his fingers, but he hurled himself over the lip and onto the wall walk, crashing down amid panicked defenders. He jerked the release rope on his hammer, dropping it on an enemy behind, then swung out with his fist, sending men broken and screaming. This was almost too easy. He seized his hammer, then brought it up and swung it in a wide arc, tossing men from the wall like leaves before a gust of wind. Just beyond him, Sadeus kicked over a ballista, destroying the device with a casual blow. Gabalar attacked with his blade, dropping corpses by the handful, their eyes burning. Up here, the fortification worked against the defenders, leaving them cramped and clumped up, perfect for shardbearers to destroy. Dalinar surged through them, and in a few moments likely killed more men than he had in his entire life. At that, he felt a surprising yet profound dissatisfaction. This was not about his skill, his momentum, or even his reputation. You could have replaced him with a toothless gaffer and produced practically the same result. He gritted his teeth against that sudden useless emotion. He dug deeply within and found the thrill waiting. It filled him, driving away dissatisfaction. Within moments, he was roaring his pleasure. Nothing these men did could touch him. He was a destroyer, a conqueror, a glorious maelstrom of death. A god. Sadeus was saying something. The silly man gestured in his golden shard plate. Dalinar blinked, looking out over the wall. He could see the rift proper from this vantage, a deep chasm in the ground that hid an entire city built up the sides of either cliff.
"Catapults, Dalinar!" Sadeus said. "Bring down those catapults!"
Right. Gavilar's armies had started to charge the walls. Those catapults, near the way down into the rift proper, were still launching stones and would drop hundreds of men. Dalinar leaped for the edge of the wall and grabbed a rope ladder to swing down. The ropes, of course, immediately snapped, sending him toppling to the ground. He struck with a crash of plate on stone. It didn't hurt, but his pride took a serious blow. Above, Sadeus looked at him over the edge. Dalinar could practically hear his voice. "Always rushing into things. Take some time to think once in a while, won't you?" That had been a flat-out Greenbine mistake. Dalinar growled and climbed to his feet, searching for his hammer. Storms! He'd bent the handle in his fall. How had he done that? It wasn't made of the same strange metal as blades and plate, but it was still good steel. Soldiers guarding the catapults swarmed toward him while the shadows of boulders passed overhead. Dalinar set his jaw, the thrill saturating him, and reached for a stout wooden door set into the wall nearby. He ripped it free, the hinges popping, and stumbled. It came off more easily than he'd expected. There was more to this armor than he'd ever imagined. Maybe he wasn't any better with the plate than some old gaffer, but he would change that. At that moment, he determined that he'd never be surprised again. He'd wear this plate morning and night. He'd sleep in the storming stuff, until he was more comfortable in it than out. He raised the wooden door and swung it like a bludgeon, sweeping soldiers away and opening a path to the catapults. Then he dashed forward and grabbed the side of one catapult. He ripped its wheel off, splintering wood and sending the machine teetering. He stepped onto it, grabbing the catapult's arm and breaking it free. Only 10 more to go. He stood atop the wrecked machine when he heard a distant voice call his name.
Dalinar!
He looked toward the wall, where Sadeus reached back and heaved his shardbearer's hammer. It spun in the air before slamming into the catapult next to Dalinar, wedging itself into the broken wood. Sadeus raised a hand in salute, and Dalinar waved back in gratitude, then grabbed the hammer. The destruction went a lot faster after that. He pounded the machines, leaving behind shattered wood. Engineers, many of them women, scrambled away, screaming, "Blackthorn! Blackthorn!" By the time he neared the last catapult, Gavilar had secured the gates and opened them to his soldiers. A flood of men entered, joining those who had scaled the walls. The last of the enemies near Dalinar fled down into the city, leaving him alone. He grunted and kicked the final broken catapult, sending it rolling backward across the stone toward the edge of the rift. It tipped, then fell over. Dalinar stepped forward, walking onto a kind of observation post, a section of rock with a railing to prevent people from slipping over the side. From this vantage, he got his first good look down at the city. The Rift was a fitting name. To his right, the chasm narrowed, but here at the middle, he'd have been hard-pressed to throw a stone across to the other side, even with shard plate. And within it, there was life. Gardens bobbing with life spren, buildings built practically on top of one another down the V-shaped cliff sides. The place teemed with a network of stilts, bridges, and wooden walkways. Dalinar turned and looked back at the wall that ran in a wide circle around the opening of the rift on all sides except the west, where the canyon continued until it opened up below at the shores of the lake. To survive in Alethkar, you had to find shelter from the storms. A wide cleft like this one was perfect for a city. But how did you protect it? Any attacking enemy would have the high ground. Many cities walked a risky line between security from storms and security from men. Dalinar shouldered Sadeus's hammer as groups of Tenelon's soldiers flooded down from the walls, forming up to flank Gavilar's army on both right and left. They'd try to press against the Kolin troops from both sides, but with three shardbearers to face, they were in trouble. Where was High Lord Tenelon himself? Behind, Thaka approached with a small squad of elites, joining Dalinar on the stone viewing platform. Thaka put his hands on the railing, whistling softly.
"Something's going on with this city," Dalinar said.
"What?"
"I don't know.
Dalinar might not pay attention to the grand plans Gavilar and Sadeus made, but he was a soldier. He knew battlefields like a woman knew her mother's recipes. He might not be able to give you measurements, but he could taste when something was off. The fighting continued behind him, Colin's soldiers clashing with Tenelon's defenders. Tenelon's armies didn't fare well. Demoralized by the advancing Colin army, the enemy ranks quickly broke and scrambled into a retreat, clogging the ramps down into the city. Gavilar and Sadeus didn't give chase. They had the high ground now. No need to rush into a potential ambush. Gavilar clomped across the stone, Sadeus beside him. They'd want to survey the city and rain arrows upon those below. Maybe even use stolen catapults, if Dalinar had left any functional. They'd siege this place until it broke.
3 shard-bearers, Dalinar thought. Tenelon has to be planning to deal with us somehow.
This viewing platform was the best vantage for looking into the city, and they'd situated the catapults right next to it, machines that the shard-bearers were certain to attack and disable. Dalinar glanced to the sides and saw cracks in the stone floor of the viewing platform.
No!
Dalinar shouted to Gavilar.
Stay back! It's a...
The enemy must have been watching, for the moment he shouted, the ground fell out from beneath him. Dalinar caught a glimpse of Gavilar, held back by Sadeus, looking on in horror as Dalinar, Thaka, and a handful of other elites were toppled into the rift. Storms. The entire section of stone where they'd been standing, the lip hanging out over the rift, had broken free. As the large section of rock tumbled down into the first buildings, Dalinar was flung into the air above the city. Everything spun around him. A moment later, he crashed into a building with an awful crunch. Something hard hit his arm, an impact so powerful he heard his armor there shatter. The building failed to stop him. He tore right through the wood and continued, helm grinding against stone as he somehow came in contact with the side of the rift. He hit another surface with a loud crunch, and blessedly here he finally stopped. He groaned, feeling a sharp pain from his left hand. He shook his head and found himself staring upward some 50 feet through a shattered section of the near-vertical wooden city. The large section of falling rock had torn a swath through the city along the steep incline, smashing houses and walkways. Dalinar had been flung just to the north and had eventually come to rest on the wooden roof of a building. He didn't see signs of his men. Thaka, the other elites. But without Shardplate. He growled, anger spren boiling around him like pools of blood. He shifted on the rooftop, but the pain in his hand made him wince. His armor all down his left arm had shattered, and in falling he appeared to have broken a few fingers. His Shardplate leaked glowing white smoke from 100 fractures, but the only pieces he'd lost completely were from his left arm and hand. He gingerly pried himself from the rooftop, but as he shifted, he broke through and fell into the home. He grunted as he hit, members of a family screaming and pulling back against the wall. Tenelon apparently hadn't told the people of his plan to crush a section of his own city in a desperate attempt to deal with the enemy shard-bearers. Dalinar got to his feet, ignoring the cowering people, and shoved open the door, breaking it with the strength of his push, and stepped out onto a wooden walkway that ran before the homes on this tier of the city. A hail of arrows immediately fell on him. He turned his right shoulder toward them, growling, shielding his eye slit as best he could while he inspected the source of the attack. 50 archers were set up on a garden platform on the other storming side of the rift from him. Wonderful! He recognized the man leading the archers. Tall, with an imperious bearing and stark white plumes on his helm. Who put chicken feathers on their helms? Looked ridiculous. Well, Tenelon was a fine enough fellow. Dalinar had beat him once at pawns, and Tenelon had paid the bet with 100 glowing bits of ruby, each dropped into a corked bottle of wine. Dalinar had always found that amusing. Reveling in the thrill, which rose in him and drove away pain, Dalinar charged along the walkway, ignoring arrows. Above, Sadeus was leading a force down one of the ramps outside the path of the rockfall, but it would be slow going. By the time they arrived, Dalinar intended to have a new shard blade. He charged onto one of the bridges that crossed the rift. Unfortunately, he knew exactly what he would do if preparing this city for an assault. Sure enough, a pair of soldiers hurried down the other side of the rift, then used axes to attack the support posts to Dalinar's bridge. It had soul-cast metal ropes holding it up, but if they could get those posts down, dropping the lines, his weight would surely cause the entire thing to fall. The bottom wash of the rift was easily another 100 feet below. Growling, Dalinar made the only choice he could. He threw himself over the side of his walkway, dropping a short distance to one below. It looked sturdy enough. Even so, 1 foot smashed through the wooden planks, nearly followed by his entire body. He heaved himself up and continued running across. Two more soldiers reached the posts holding up this bridge, and they began frantically hacking away. The walkway shook beneath Dalinar's feet. Stormfather, he didn't have much time. But there were no more walkways within jumping distance. Dalinar pushed himself to a run, roaring, his footfalls cracking boards. A single black arrow fell from above, swooping like a sky eel. It dropped one of the soldiers. Another arrow followed, hitting the second soldier even as he gawked at his fallen ally. The walkway stopped shaking and Dalinar grinned, pulling to a stop. He turned, spotting a man standing near the sheared-off section of stone above. He lifted a black bow toward Dalinar.
"Teleb, you storming miracle," Dalinar said.
He reached the other side and plucked an axe from the hands of a dead man. Then he charged up a ramp toward where he'd seen High Lord Tanelon. He found the place easily, a wide wooden platform built on struts connected to parts of the wall below and draped with vines and blooming rock buds. Lifespren scattered as Dalinar reached it. Centered in the garden, Tanelon waited with a force of some 50 soldiers. Popping inside his helm, Dalinar stepped up to confront them. Tanelon was armored in simple steel, no shard plate, though a brutal-looking shard blade, wide, with a hooked tip, appeared in his grasp. Tanelon barked for his soldiers to stand back and lower their bows. Then he strode toward Dalinar, holding the shard blade with both hands. Everyone always fixated upon shard blades. Specific weapons had lore dedicated to them, and people traced which kings or bright lords had carried which sword. Well, Dalinar had used both blade and plate, and if given the choice of one, he'd pick plate every time. All he needed to do was get in one solid hit on Tanelon, and the fight would be over. The High Lord, however, had to contend with a foe who could resist his blows. The thrill thrummed inside Dalinar. Standing between two squat trees, he set his stance, keeping his exposed left arm pointed away from the High Lord, while gripping the axe in his gauntleted right hand. Though it was a war axe, it felt like a child's plaything.
"You should not have come here, Dalinar," Tanelon said.
His voice bore a distinctively nasal accent common to this region. The Rifters always had considered themselves a people apart.
"We had no quarrel with you or yours."
"You refused to submit to the king," Dalinar said, armor plates clinking as he rounded the High Lord while trying to keep an eye on the soldiers.
He wouldn't put it past them to attack him once he was distracted by the duel. It was what he himself would have done.
"The king?"
Tanelon demanded, anger spren boiling up around him.
"There hasn't been a throne in Alethkar for generations. Even if we were to have a king again, who is to say the Kolins deserve the mantle?"
"The way I see it," Dalinar said, "the people of Alethkar deserve a king who is the strongest and most capable of leading them in battle. If only there were a way to prove that."
He grinned inside his helm. Tanelon attacked, sweeping in with his shard blade and trying to leverage his superior reach. Dalinar danced back, waiting for his moment. The thrill was a heady rush, a lust to prove himself. But he needed to be cautious. Ideally, Dalinar would prolong this fight, relying on his plate's superior strength and the stamina it provided. Unfortunately, that plate was still leaking, and he had all these guards to deal with. Still, he tried to play it as Tenelon would expect, dodging attacks, acting as if he were going to drag out the fight. Tenelon growled and came in again. Dalinar blocked the blow with his arm, then made a perfunctory swing with his axe. Tenelon dodged back easily. Stormfather, that blade was long, almost as tall as Dalinar was. Dalinar maneuvered, brushing against the foliage of the garden. He couldn't even feel the pain of his broken fingers anymore. The thrill called to him.
Wait. Act like you're drawing this out as long as possible.
Tenelon advanced again, and Dalinar dodged backward, faster because of his plate. And then, when Tenelon tried his next strike, Dalinar ducked toward him. He deflected the sharp blade with his arm again, but this blow hit hard, shattering the arm plate. Still, Dalinar's surprise rush let him lower his shoulder and slam it against Tenelon. The High Lord's armor clanged, bending before the force of the shard plate, and the High Lord tripped. Unfortunately, Dalinar was off balance just enough from his rush to fall alongside the High Lord. The platform shook as they hit the ground, the wood cracking and groaning. Damnation! Dalinar had not wanted to go to the ground while surrounded by foes. Still, he had to stay inside the reach of that blade. Dalinar dropped off his right gauntlet. Without the arm piece connecting it to the rest of the armor, it was dead weight, as the two of them twisted in a heap. He'd lost his axe, unfortunately. The High Lord battered against Dalinar with the pommel of his sword to no effect. But with one hand broken and the other lacking the power of plate, Dalinar couldn't get a good hold on his foe. Dalinar rolled, finally positioning himself above Tenelon, where the weight of the shard plate would keep his foe pinned. At that moment, though, the other soldiers attacked, just as he'd expected. Honorable duels like this, on a battlefield at least, always lasted only until your light eyes was losing. Dalinar rolled free. The soldiers obviously weren't ready for how quickly he responded. He got to his feet and scooped up his axe, then lashed out. His right arm still had the pauldron and down to the elbow brace, so when he swung, he had power. A strange mix of shard-enhanced strength and frailty from his exposed arms. He had to be careful not to snap his own wrist. He dropped three men with a flurry of axe slices. The others backed away, blocking him with pole arms as their fellows helped Tenelon to his feet.
"You speak of the people,"
Tenelon said hoarsely, gauntleted hand feeling at his chest where the cuirass had been bent significantly by Dalinar's rush. He seemed to be having trouble breathing.
"As if this were about them. As if it were for their good that you loot, you pillage, you murder. You're an uncivilized brute." "You can't civilize war," Dalinar said. "There's no painting it up and making it pretty. You don't have to pull sorrow behind you like a sledge on the stones, scraping and crushing those you pass. You're a monster."
"I'm a soldier," Dalinar said, eyeing Tenelon's men, many of whom were preparing their bows.
Tenelon coughed.
"My city is lost. My plan has failed. But I can do Alethkar one last service. I can take you down, you bastard."
The archers started to loose. Dalinar roared and threw himself to the ground, hitting the platform with the weight of shard plate. The wood cracked around him, weakened by the fighting earlier, and he broke through it, shattering struts underneath. The entire platform came crashing down around him, and together they fell toward the tier below. Dalinar heard screams, and he hit the next walkway hard enough to daze him, even with shard plate. Dalinar shook his head, groaning, and found his helm cracked right down the front, the uncommon vision granted by the armor spoiled. He pulled the helm free with one hand and gasped for breath. Storms his good arm hurt, too. He glanced at it and found splinters piercing his skin, including one chunk as long as a dagger. He grimaced. Below, the few remaining soldiers who had been positioned to cut down bridges came charging up toward him.
"Steady, Dalinar. Be ready."
He got to his feet, dazed, exhausted, but the two soldiers didn't come for him. They huddled around Tenelon's body where it had fallen from the platform above. The soldiers grabbed him, then fled. Dalinar roared and awkwardly gave pursuit. His plate moved slowly and he stumbled through the wreckage of the fallen platform, trying to keep up with the soldiers. The pain from his arms made him mad with rage. But the thrill drove him forward. He would not be beaten. He would not stop. Tanelon's shard blade had not appeared beside his body. That meant his foe still lived. Dalinar had not yet won. Fortunately, most of the soldiers had been positioned to fight on the other side of the city. This side was practically empty, save for huddled townspeople. He caught glimpses of them hiding in their homes. Dalinar limped up ramps along the side of the rift, following the men dragging their bright lord. Near the top, the two soldiers set their burden down beside an exposed portion of the chasm's rock wall. They did something that caused a portion of that wall to open inward, revealing a hidden door. They towed their fallen bright lord into it, and two other soldiers, responding to their frantic calls, rushed out to meet Dalinar, who arrived moments later. Helmless, Dalinar saw red as he engaged them. They bore weapons, he did not. They were fresh, and he had wounds nearly incapacitating both arms. The fight still ended with the two soldiers on the ground, broken and bleeding. Dalinar kicked open the hidden door, plated legs functioning enough to smash it down. He lurched into a small tunnel with diamond spheres glowing on the walls. That door was covered in hardened creme on the outside, making it seem like a part of the wall. If he hadn't seen them enter, it would have taken days, maybe weeks, to locate this place. At the end of a short walk, he found the two soldiers he'd followed. Judging by the blood trail, they'd deposited their bright lord in the closed room behind them. They rushed Dalinar with the fatalistic determination of men who knew they were probably dead. The pain in Dalinar's arms and head seemed nothing before the thrill. He had rarely felt it so strong as he did now. A beautiful clarity, such a wonderful emotion. He ducked forward, supernaturally quick, and used his shoulder to crush one soldier against the wall. The other fell to a well-placed kick. Then Dalinar burst through the door beyond them. Tanelon lay on the ground here, blood surrounding him. A beautiful woman was draped across him, weeping. Only one other person was in the small chamber, a young boy. 6, perhaps 7. Tears streaked the child's face, and he struggled to lift his father's shard blade in 2 hands. Dalinar loomed in the doorway.
"You can't have my daddy,"
the boy said, words distorted by his sorrow. Pain sprang crawled around the floor.
"You can't! You...
His voice fell to a whisper.
"Daddy said... we fight monsters, and with faith, we will win."
A few hours later, Dalinar sat on the edge of the rift, his legs swinging over the broken city below. His new shard blade rested across his lap, his plate, deformed and broken, in a heap beside him. His arms were bandaged, but he'd chased away the surgeons. He stared out at what seemed an empty plain, then flicked his eyes toward the signs of human life below. Dead bodies in heaps, broken buildings, splinters of civilization. Gavilar eventually walked up, trailed by 2 bodyguards from Dalinar's elites, Kadash and Febin, today. Gavilar waved them back, then groaned as he settled down beside Dalinar, removing his helm. Exhaustion spun overhead, though, despite his fatigue, Gavilar looked thoughtful. With those keen, pale green eyes, he'd always seemed to know so much. Growing up, Dalinar had simply assumed that his brother would always be right in whatever he said or did. Aging hadn't much changed his opinion of the man.
"Congratulations," Gavilar said, nodding toward the blade. "Sadius is irate it wasn't his."
"He'll find one of his own eventually," Dalinar said. "He's too ambitious for me to believe otherwise."
Gavilar grunted.
This attack nearly cost us too much.
Sadius is saying we need to be more careful, not risk ourselves and our shards in solitary assaults.
Sadius is smart, Delinar said.
He reached gingerly with his right hand, the less mangled one, and raised a mug of wine to his lips. It was the only drug he cared about for the pain, and maybe it would help with the shame, too. Both feelings seemed stark, now that the thrill had receded and left him deflated.
"What do we do with them, Dalinar?" Gavilar asked, waving down toward the crowds of civilians the soldiers were rounding up. "Tens of thousands of people. They won't be cowed easily. They won't like that you killed their High Lord and his heir. These people will resist us for years.
I can feel it." Dalinar took a drink.
"Make soldiers of them," he said. "Tell them we'll spare their families if they fight for us. You want to stop doing a shard-bearer rush at the start of battles? Sounds like we'll need some expendable troops."
Gavilar nodded, considering.
"Sadius is right about other things, too, you know. About us. And what we're going to have to become."
"Don't talk to me about that."
"Dalinar, I lost half my elites today. My captain included. I've got enough problems."
"Why are we here, fighting? Is it for honor? Is it for Alethkar?"
Dalinar shrugged.
"We can't just keep acting like a bunch of thugs," Gavilar said. "We can't rob every city we pass, feast every night. We need discipline. We need to hold the land we have. We need bureaucracy, order, laws, politics."
Dalinar closed his eyes, distracted by the shame he felt. What if Gavilar found out?
"We're going to have to grow up,"
Gavilar said softly.
"And become soft, like these High Lords we kill? That's why we started, isn't it? Because they were all lazy, fat, corrupt?"
"I don't know anymore. I'm a father now, Dalinar. That makes me wonder about what we do once we have it all. How do we make a kingdom of this place?"
Storms. A kingdom? For the first time in his life, Dalinar found that idea horrifying. Gavilar eventually stood up, responding to some messengers who were calling for him.
"Could you," he said to Dalinar, "at least try to be a little less foolhardy in future battles?"
"This coming from you?"
"A thoughtful me," Gavilar said. "An exhausted me. Enjoy Oathbringer. You earned it."
"Oathbringer?"
"Your sword," Gavilar said. "Storms, didn't you listen to anything last night? That's Sunmaker's old sword."
Sadies, the Sunmaker.
He had been the last man to unite Alethkar, centuries ago.
Dalinar shifted the blade in his lap, letting the light play off the pristine metal.
"It's yours now," Gavilar said. "By the time we're done, I'll have it so that nobody even thinks of Sunmaker anymore. Just House Colin and Alethkar."
He walked away. Dalinar rammed the shard blade into the stone and leaned back, closing his eyes again, and remembering the sound of a brave boy crying.
12. Negotiations. "I ask not that you forgive me, nor that you even understand."
From Oathbringer, Preface.
Dalinar stood beside the glass windows in an upper floor room of Uathiru, hands clasped behind his back. He could see his reflection hinted in the window, and beyond it, vast openness. The sky cloud-free,
the sun burning white. Windows as tall as he was, he'd never seen anything like them. Who would dare build something of glass, so brittle, and face it toward the storms? But of course, this city was above the storms. These windows seemed a mark of defiance, a symbol of what the Radiance had meant. They had stood above the pettiness of world politics, and because of that height, they could see so far.
"You idealize them," said a distant voice in his head, like rumbling thunder. "They were men like you. No better, no worse."
"I find that encouraging," Dalinar whispered back. "If they were like us, then it means we can be like them."
"They eventually betrayed us. Do not forget that."
"Why?" Dalinar asked. "What happened? What changed them?" The Stormfather fell silent.
"Please," Dalinar said, "tell me." "Some things are better left forgotten," the voice said to him. "You, of all men, should understand this, considering the hole in your mind and the person who once filled it."
Dalinar drew in a sharp breath, stung by the words.
"Bright Lord," Brightness Calamy said from behind, "the Emperor is ready for you."
Dalinar turned. Eurytheru's upper levels held several unique rooms, including this amphitheater. Shaped like a half-moon, the room had windows at the top, the straight side, then rows of seats leading down to a speaking floor below. Curiously, each seat had a small pedestal beside it. For the Radiance Spren, the Stormfather told him. Dalinar started down the steps toward his team. Aladar and his daughter May, Navani, wearing a bright green hava, sitting in the front row with feet stretched out before her, shoes off and ankles crossed. Elderly Calami to right, and Teshev Kal, one of Alethkar's finest political minds, to advise. Her two senior wards sat beside her, ready to provide research or translation if needed. A small group, prepared to change the world.
"Send my greetings to the Emperor," Dalinar instructed.
Calami nodded, writing. Then she cleared her throat, reading the response that the span read, writing as if on its own, relayed.
"You are greeted by His Imperial Majesty, Chief V.D. Yanagon I, Emperor of Makabak, King of Aesir, Lord of the Bronze Palace, Prime Akasix, Grand Minister and Emissary of Aesir."
"An imposing title," Navani noted, "for a 15-year-old boy."
"He supposedly raised a child from the dead," Teshev said. "A miracle that gained him the support of the viziers. Local word is that they had trouble finding a new prime after the last two were murdered by our old friend the assassin in white. So the viziers picked a boy with questionable lineage and made up a story about him saving someone's life in order to demonstrate a divine mandate."
Dalinar grunted. "Making things up doesn't sound very Aesish."
"They're fine with it," Navani said, "as long as you can find witnesses willing to fill out affidavits. Calami, thank His Imperial Majesty for meeting with us and his translators for their efforts."
Calami wrote, and then she looked up at Dalinar, who began to pace the center of the room. Navani stood to join him, eschewing her shoes, walking in socks.
"Your Imperial Majesty," Dalinar said, "I speak to you from the top of Eurytheru, City of Legend. The sights are breathtaking. I invite you to visit me here and tour the city. You are welcome to bring any guards or retinue you see fit."
He looked to Navani, and she nodded. They'd discussed long how to approach the monarchs and had settled on a soft invitation. Aesir was first, the most powerful country in the West, and home to what would be the most central and important of the Oath Gates to secure. The response took time. The Aesish government was a kind of beautiful mess, though Gavilar had often admired it. Layers of clerics filled all levels, where both men and women wrote. Scions were kind of like ardents, though they weren't slaves, which Dalinar found odd. In Aesir, being a priest minister in the government was the highest honor to which one could aspire. Traditionally, the Aesish prime claimed to be emperor of all Makabak, a region that included over a half dozen kingdoms and princedoms. In reality, he was king over only Aesir, but Aesir did cast a long, long shadow. As they waited, Dalinar stepped up beside Navani, resting his fingers on one of her shoulders, then drew them across her back, the nape of her neck, and let them linger on the other shoulder. Who would have thought a man his age could feel so giddy? "Your Highness," the reply finally came, Calame reading the words. "We thank you for your warning about the storm that blew from the wrong direction. Your timely words have been noted and recorded in the official annals of the Empire, recognizing you as a friend to Aesir." Calame waited for more, but the span reed stopped moving. Then the ruby flashed, indicating that they were done.
"That wasn't much of a response," Aladar said. "Why didn't he reply to your invitation, Dalinar?"
"Being noted in their official records is a great honor to the Aesish," Teshev said. "So they've paid you a compliment."
"Yes," Navani said, "but they are trying to dodge the offer we made. Press them, Dalinar."
"Calame, please send the following," Dalinar said. "I am honored, though I wish my inclusion in your annals could have been due to happier circumstances. Let us discuss the future of Roshar together, here. I am eager to make your personal acquaintance."
They waited as patiently as they could for a response. It finally came in Alethi.
"We of the Aesish crown are saddened to share mourning for the fallen with you. As your noble brother was killed by the Shin Destroyer, so were beloved members of our court. This creates a bond between us."
That was all. Navani clicked her tongue.
"They're not going to be pushed into an answer."
"They could at least explain themselves," Dalinar snapped. "It feels like we're having two different conversations."
"The Aesish," Teshev said, "do not like to give offense. They're almost as bad as the Emuli in that regard, particularly with foreigners."
It wasn't only an Aesish attribute in Dalinar's estimation. It was the way of politicians worldwide. Already this conversation was starting to feel like his efforts to bring the High Princes to his side back in the war camps. Half answer after half answer, mild promises with no bite to them, laughing eyes that mocked him even while they pretended to be perfectly sincere. Storms. Here he was again, trying to unite people who didn't want to listen to him. He couldn't afford to be bad at this, not any longer.
"There was a time," he thought, "when I united in a different way."
He smelled smoke, heard men screaming in pain, remembered bringing blood and ash to those who defied his brother. Those memories had become particularly vivid lately.
"Another tactic, maybe?" Navani suggested. "Instead of an invitation, try an offer of aid."
"Your Imperial Majesty," Dalinar said, "war is coming. Surely you have seen the changes in the Parshmen. The Voidbringers have returned. I would have you know that the Alethi are your allies in this conflict. We would share information regarding our successes and failures in resisting this enemy, with hope that you'll report the same to us. Mankind must be unified in the face of the mounting threat."
The reply eventually came,
"We agree that aiding one another in this new age will be of the utmost importance. We are glad to exchange information. What do you know of these transformed Parshmen?"
"We engaged them on the Shattered Plains," Dalinar said, relieved to make some kind of headway. "Creatures with red eyes, and similar in many ways to the Parshmen we found on the Shattered Plains, only more dangerous. I will have my scribes prepare reports for you detailing all we have learned in fighting the Parshendi over the years."
"Excellent.
the reply finally came. This information will be extremely welcome in our current conflict.
What is the status of your cities? Dalinar asked. What have the Parshmen been doing there? Do they seem to have a goal beyond wanton destruction?
Tensely, they waited for word. So far, they'd been able to discover blessed little about the Parshmen the world over. Captain Kaladin sent reports using scribes from towns he visited, but knew next to nothing. Cities were in chaos, and reliable information scarce.
Fortunately, came the reply, our city stands, and the enemy is not actively attacking any longer. We are negotiating with the hostiles.
Negotiating? Dalinar said, shocked.
He turned to Teshev, who shook her head in wonder.
Please clarify, Your Majesty, Navani said. The Voidbringers are willing to negotiate with you?
Yes, came the reply. We are exchanging contracts. They have very detailed demands with outrageous stipulations. We hope that we can forestall armed conflict in order to gather ourselves and fortify the city.
They can write? Navani pressed. The Voidbringers themselves are sending you contracts?
The average Parshman cannot write, so far as we can tell, the reply came. But some are different, stronger, with strange powers. They do not speak like the others.
Your Majesty,
Dalinar said, stepping up to the Spanreed writing table, speaking more urgently, as if the Emperor and his ministers could hear his passion through the written word.
I need to talk to you directly. I can come myself through the portal we wrote of earlier. We must get it working again.
Silence. It stretched so long that Dalinar found himself grinding his teeth, itching to summon a shard blade and dismiss it over and over, as had been his habit as a youth. He'd picked it up from his brother. A response finally came.
We regret to inform you that the device you mention, Calamy read, is not functional in our city. We have investigated it and have found that it was destroyed long ago. We cannot come to you, nor you to us. Many apologies.
He's telling us this now? Dalinar said. Storms, that's information we could have used as soon as he learned it.
It's a lie, Navani said. The oath gate on the Shattered Plains functioned after centuries of storms and Krem buildup. The one in Azamir is a monument in the Grand Market, a large dome in the center of the city.
Or so she'd determined from maps. The one in Kolinar had been incorporated into the palace structure, while the one in Thalen City was some kind of religious monument. A beautiful relic like this wouldn't simply be destroyed.
I agree with Brightness Navani's assessment, Teshev said. They are worried about the idea of you or your armies visiting. This is an excuse.
She frowned as if the Emperor and his ministers were little more than spoiled children disobeying their tutors. The Spanreed started writing again.
What does it say? Dalinar said, anxious.
It's an affidavit,
Navani said, amused.
That the Oath Gate is not functioning, signed by Imperial architects and storm wardens.
She read further.
Oh, this is delightful. Only the Azish would assume you'd want certification that something is broken.
Notably, Calamy added, it only certifies that the device does not function as a portal. But of course it would not. Not unless a Radiant were to visit and work it. This affidavit basically says that when turned off, the device doesn't work.
Write this, Calamy, Dalinar said. Your Majesty, you ignored me once. Destruction caused by the Everstorm was the result. Please, this time listen. You cannot negotiate with the Voidbringers. We must unify, share information, and protect Roshar. Together.
She wrote it, and Dalinar waited, hands pressed against the table.
We misspoke when we mentioned negotiations, Calamy read. It was a mistake of translation. We agree to share information, but time is short right now. We will contact you again to further discuss. Farewell, High Prince Colin.
Bah! Dalinar said, pushing himself back from the table. Fools! Idiots! Storming Light Eyes in damnation's own politics!
He stalked across the room, wishing he had something to kick, before forcing his temper under control.
That's more of a stonewall than I expected, Navani said, folding her arms. Brightness, Karl?
In my experiences with the Azish, Teshev said, they are extremely proficient at saying very little in as many words as possible. This is not an unusual example of communication with their upper ministers. Don't be put off. It will take time to accomplish anything with them.
Time during which Roshar burns, Dalinar said. Why did they pull back regarding their claim to have had negotiations with the Voidbringers? Are they thinking of allying themselves to the enemy?
I hesitate to guess, Teshev said. But I would say that they simply decided they'd given away more information than intended.
We need Azir, Dalinar said. Nobody in Makabuk will listen to us unless we have Azir's blessing, not to mention that Oathgate.
He trailed off as a different span read on the table started blinking.
It's the Thalens, Calamy said. They're early.
You want to reschedule?
Navani asked. Dalinar shook his head.
No. We can't afford to wait another few days before the Queen can spare time again.
He took a deep breath. Storms talking to politicians was more exhausting than a 100-mile march in full armor.
Proceed, Calamy. I'll contain my frustration.
Navani settled down on one of the seats, though Dalinar remained standing. Light poured in through the windows, pure and bright. It flowed down, bathing him. He breathed in, almost feeling as if he could taste the sunlight. He'd spent too many days inside the twisting stone corridors of Yubithiru, lit by the frail light of candles and lamps.
Her Royal Highness, Calamy read, Brightness Fenranandi, Queen of Thelenar, writes to you.
Calamy paused.
Bright Lord, pardon the interruption, but that indicates that the Queen holds the span reed herself, rather than using a scribe.
To another woman, that would have been intimidating. To Calamy, it was merely one of many footnotes, which she added copiously to the bottom of the page before preparing the reed to relay Dalinar's words.
Your Majesty, Dalinar said, clasping his hands behind his back and pacing the stage at the center of the seats. Do better. Unite them. I send you greetings from Yubithiru, holy city of the Knights Radiant, and extend to you our humblest invitation. This tower is truly a sight to behold, matched only by the glory of a sitting monarch. I would be honored to present it for you to experience.
The span reed quickly scribbled a reply. Queen Fen was writing directly in Alethi.
Colin, Calamy read, you old brute, quit spreading chalscat. What do you really want?
I always did like her,
Navani noted.
I'm being sincere, Your Majesty, Dalinar said. My only desire is for us to meet in person and to talk to you and show you what we've discovered. The world is changing around us.
Oh, came the reply. The world is changing, is it? What led you to this incredible conclusion? Was it the fact that our slaves suddenly became void bringers? Or was it perhaps the storm that blew the wrong way? She wrote that twice as large as the line around it, Bright Lord. Ripping our cities apart?
Aladar cleared his throat.
Her Majesty seems to be having a bad day.
She's insulting us, Navani said. For Fen, that actually implies a good day.
She's always been perfectly civil the few times I've met her, Dalinar said with a frown.
She was being queenly then,
Navani said.
You've got her talking to you directly. Trust me, it's a good sign.
Your Majesty, Dalinar said, please tell me of your Parshmen. The transformation came upon them?
Yes, she replied. Storming monsters stole our best ships, almost everything in the harbor from single-masted sloops on up, and escaped the city.
They sailed? Dalinar said, again shocked. Confirm. They didn't attack?
There were some scuffles, Fenn wrote, but most everyone was too busy dealing with the effects of the storm. By the time we got things somewhat sorted out, they were sailing away in a grand fleet of royal warships and private trading vessels alike.
Dalinar drew a breath. We don't know half as much about the Voidbringers as we assumed. Your Majesty, he continued, you might remember that we warned you about the imminent arrival of that storm.
I believed you, Fenn said, if only because we got word from New Natanen confirming it. We tried to prepare, but a nation cannot upend 4 millennia worth of tradition at a snap of the fingers. Balin City is a shambles, Colin. The storm broke our aqueducts and sewer systems, and ripped apart our docks, flattened the entire outer market. We have to fix all our cisterns, reinforce our buildings to withstand storms, and rebuild society, all without any parchment laborers and in the middle of the storming weeping. I don't have time for sightseeing.
It's hardly sightseeing, Your Majesty, Dalinar said. I am aware of your problems, and dire though they are, we cannot ignore the Voidbringers. I intend to convene a grand conference of kings to fight this threat.
Led by you, Fenn wrote in reply. Of course.
Urethiru is the natural location for a meeting, Dalinar said. Your Majesty, the Knights Radiant have returned. We speak again their ancient oaths and bind the surges of nature to us. If we can restore your oath gate to functionality, you can be here in an afternoon and return the same evening to direct the needs of your city.
Navani nodded at this tactic, though Aladar folded his arms, looking thoughtful.
What?
Dalinar asked him as Calamy wrote.
We need a Radiant to travel to the city to activate their oath gate, right?
Aladar asked.
Yes, Navani said. A Radiant needs to unlock the gate on this side, which we can do at any moment. Then one has to travel to the destination city and undo the lock there as well. That done, a Radiant can initiate a transfer from either location.
Then the only one we have that can theoretically get to Thalen City is the Windrunner, Aladar said. But what if it takes him months to get back here? Or what if he's captured by the enemy? Can we even make good on our promises, Dalinar?
A troubling problem, but one that Dalinar thought he might have an answer to. There was a weapon that he'd decided to keep hidden for now. It might work as well as a Radiant's shardblade in opening the oath gates, and might let someone reach Thalen City by flight. That was moot for the time being. First he needed a willing ear on the other side of the span reed. Fenn's reply came.
I will admit that my merchants are intrigued by these oath gates. We have lore surrounding them, that the one most passionate could cause the portal of worlds to open again. I think every girl in Thalena dreams of being the one to invoke it.
The passions, Navani said with a downward turn of her lips.
The Thalens had a pagan pseudo-religion, and that had always been a curious aspect in dealing with them. They would praise the heralds one moment, then speak of the passions the next. Well, Dalinar wasn't one to fault another for unconventional beliefs.
If you want to send me what you know about these oath gates, well, that sounds great, Fenn continued. But I'm not interested in some grand conference of kings. You let me know what you boys come up with, because I'm going to be here frantically trying to rebuild my city.
Well, Aladar said, at least we finally got an honest response.
I'm not convinced this is honest, Dalinar said.
He rubbed his chin, thinking. He'd only met this woman a few times, but something seemed off about her responses.
I agree, Bright Lord, Teshuv said.
I think any Thalen would jump at the chance to come pull strings at a meeting of monarchs, if only to see if she can find a way to get trade deals out of them. She is most certainly hiding something.
Offer troops, Navani said, to help her rebuild.
Your Majesty, Dalinar said, I am deeply grieved to hear of your losses. I have many soldiers here who are currently unoccupied. I would gladly send you a battalion to help repair your city.
The reply was slow in coming.
I'm not sure what I think of having Alethi troops on my stone, well-intentioned or not,
Aladar grunted.
She's worried about invasion? Everyone knows Alethian ships don't mix.
She's not worried about us arriving on ships, Dalinar said. She's worried about an army of troops suddenly materializing in the center of her city.
A very rational worry. If Dalinar had the inclination, he could send a Windrunner to secretly open a city's oath gate and invade in an unprecedented assault that appeared right behind enemy lines. He needed allies, not subjects. So he wouldn't do it. At least, not to a potential friendly city. Kolinar, however, was another story. They still didn't have reliable word of what was happening in the Alethi capital. But if the rioting was still going on, he'd been thinking that there might be a way to get armies in and restore order. For now, he needed to focus on Queen Fen.
Your Majesty, he said, nodding for Calamy to write, consider my offer of troops, please. And as you do, might I suggest that you begin searching among your people for budding Knights Radiant? They are the key to working oath gates.
We have had a number of Radiants manifest near the Shattered Plains. They are formed through an interaction with certain Spren, who seem to be searching for worthy candidates. I can only assume this is happening worldwide. It is entirely likely that among the people of your city someone has already spoken the oaths.
You are giving up quite an advantage, Dalinar, Aladar noted.
I'm planting a seed, Aladar, Dalinar said. And I'll plant it on any hill I can find, regardless of who owns it. We must fight as a unified people.
I don't dispute that, Aladar said, standing up and stretching. But your knowledge of the Radiance is a bargaining point, one that can perhaps draw people to you, force them to work